good morning.
Good morning. I'll first introduce you to our audience. You're a Belgian law professor, and since about 5 years, you are a special rapporteur at the United Nations on the right to food.
Indeed.
There is a lot to do since a few months already about the common agricultural policy of the European Union. Now, this is one of the oldest policies, I think.
Yes, the common agricultural policy was launched in 1962, in fact, and has been reformed a number of times since, most importantly in 1993. But it has been traditionally one of the most important policies and absorbing a large part of the budget of the European communities because it consists in a funding scheme.
Aha. That's the most important part of it.
Right.
So, and do you happen to know what the important reform was in 1993?
Well, the reform had two objectives. One was to introduce much more environmental criteria in order to ensure a sustainable use of the resources in the European Union. And to encourage farmers to practice more sustainable types of farming. And the other objective was to avoid the incentive to produce huge surpluses. And the objective was to de-link the support from the levels of production. So that decoupling has been pursued since. And it's a way to avoid excessive overproduction and dumping on the global markets.
So, and the first objective, was it met?
Well, in part. I think these reforms, of course, are always very gradual, and we still are increasing the environmental dimensions of the common agricultural policy. This is a policy that is greening gradually, but of course we could always go further. But lots of progress has been made, and I think overall the changes in the common agricultural policy since the past 10 years have been going in the right direction.
But it could be better.
It could be better because we still have a very a very important impact on the local markets in developing countries. And in the past, this was worse in the sense that we were subsidizing exports and, in effect, paying agricultural producers from the EU to dump their produce on the local markets of developing countries, driving small farmers that are less competitive in developing countries out of business. This has been changed in part in the sense that these export subsidies have been almost completely dismantled, but we still are supporting our agricultural producers in ways that do not avoid all disruptions on local markets in developing countries. And I've been calling for this to be more carefully monitored. Unfortunately, the recent vote in the European Parliament of the Agriculture Committee has not followed the suggestion to establish a monitoring system for the common agricultural policy, which would have been desirable to assess the impacts on developing countries.
Yes, I read some that in December there was a that the Development Committee of the European Parliament started this monitor idea in June, and I suppose you are linked to that committee.
Well, I have been expressing my views on the common agricultural policy, and I did suggest that we should allow for a permanent monitoring of the impacts on developing countries of the common agricultural policy, and some members of the European Parliament have followed upon this idea and suggested this, but apparently there was no majority to support this. Of course, the battle is not ended because there will be a vote in the plenary of the European Parliament, but nevertheless, it is unlikely that this proposal will be finally approved. And unfortunately, it means that we still maybe causing negative consequences on developing countries' markets without us being aware of this and without this being remedied and without the farmers in developing countries having any possibility to question the impacts of these policies.
I read some of it and I didn't find the word development, but maybe it wouldn't even be necessary to explicitly mention this this care about developing countries if only the policy itself is adequate enough?
Well, there is a policy that the EU has been following since about 5 years, which is called Policy Coherence for Development. And the idea is very simple. All policies of the EU that may have an impact on the development in developing countries and actually the achievement of the Millennium Development Goals that approved in 2000 should be converging towards supporting development. So what we do in the area of trade and development cooperation and in the areas of energy and so on, we should do with a view to enhancing the development of developing countries. But this policy coherence for development, which is an approved policy of the EU, requires that we monitor carefully the impact of what we do. And this is not done well enough for the common agricultural policy.
Is it done well enough for other policies, or that's not your expertise, of course?
Well, the European Parliament has established among its members a standing rapporteur on policy coherence for development, and this member of the European Parliament is in charge of assessing the impact of EU policies on developing countries, and it is a system that exists, allowing some monitoring to take place, but the problem is the information is not always collected. This member of the European Parliament is not always does not always have the capacity to really assess all these impacts, and so it could be improved very significantly.
Yes, by adding some staff, maybe.
Adding staff, collecting information, having appropriate indicators, and allowing for those affected by the EU policies to have direct access to this standing rapporteur on policy coherence for development, for this rapporteur to be able to question the European Commission and to question the member states about the impacts of their policies.
Do you expect there to be more amendments in March or in April when the final vote is there?
Well, the debate is, of course, not closed, but it is a very sad conclusion from the debates within the Agriculture Committee of the European Committee of the European Parliament that the proposals that were made to ensure more consistency between development cooperation on the one hand and trade policies on the other hand were not approved. Unfortunately, it will be extremely difficult for this to change for the plenary, but I know that some members of the European Parliament are mobilizing for this issue.
Okay, so nothing is lost so far, although it doesn't look too bright. Then another thing that I found about you and European food is that you called the UN to scrap biofuel targets. Now, I can see we had several talks here yet about biofuels, and I can see how this is negatively impacting third world countries, but I thought that now the European Union was only talking about second and third generation and not first generation, which is food.
No, that is unfortunately not the case. The European Union adopted in 2008 an objective, which is to have an increase in the use of renewable energies in transport. And unfortunately, what this means is biofuels that are based on first-generation techniques, meaning the use of agricultural production to produce energy. And the second and third generation biofuels are not yet viable commercially, and they are not sufficiently developed yet. So we need much more research in order to make them viable. So the reality is that for the moment, the policies pursued by the EU and by the US, which are increasing significantly their consumption of biofuels for transport, is having a huge impact on land in developing countries. Mm-hmm. Lots of the land grabbing that is taking place in sub-Saharan Africa, in South Asia, is the result of energy crops being grown in order to satisfy the demands of the consumers in rich countries, including the US and the EU. And it is a very serious concern, because the small farmers in developing countries, the indigenous populations, those depending on access to natural resources, are essentially priced out of these markets and land rights that increasingly put into competition with one another populations with hugely different purchasing powers. The rich consumers in the north on the one hand, and the poor farmers and poor consumers of the south on the other hand.
Yes, so us being able to drive our cars is more important than other people having enough to eat. But then
now,
again,
if this were a means to support the incomes of small farmers in the global south, it could be viable. The problem is, it actually is a market that is dominated by a small number of large companies, and small farmers very rarely are involved in biofuels production, and the non-food producers are negatively impacted, because this leads to an increase in the price of local food commodities in these markets. So I think the impacts are very real, very negative, and biofuels are one major reason for the volatile prices over the past 5 years on the global markets.
Yes, and this might be really an example of how a European Union policy is not consistent and not coherent. So this is a case for the policy coherence for development, I suppose?
Absolutely, this is a good example.
Yes, and you have asked the European Union, or you have, I don't know how, but the question was asked to scrap those fuel targets, but what was the reaction?
The European Commission is divided. Some within the European Commission hold strongly on biofuels policies, and that is particularly the position of one general directorate, which is energy. Others realize that this is simply not something that is sustainable, and is the case for DG Environment and for the DG that works for development cooperation. So there's a debate within the Commission to which I contributed, and the result was a compromise solution in which the mandates would not be scrapped, but would be reduced. And that announcement was made in October 2012. The European Commission finally listened not only to people like myself or NGOs, but also to its own scientists that were denouncing the fact that the environmental benefits from biofuels were not quite as huge as expected. And so luckily the Commission is gradually changing its position, but it's a very slow process.
When can we expect fully efficient second and third generation biofuels?
I think that's difficult to say, because it all depends on how much people are willing to pay before these biofuels can compete with fossil energies. You see, the problem is when the prices of oil go down, biofuels are much less viable because they are more expensive to produce, and this is especially the case for second, third generation biofuels. When it will become a viable option will also depend on the evolution of the price of oil.
Well, which will go up, I suppose, because we are using it much faster than it grows.
Of course, and we have already crossed the peak oil moment. In according to the International Agency on Energy, we have crossed this in 2010. In other terms, we already are in a situation where the ability to increase production is unable to cope with the increase in demand. So gradually we will be facing more scarcity, and the prices will be more volatile and will go up. And I think it's a good thing, because we must urgently get rid of our addiction to oil and gas.
Mm-hmm. It's very addictive, I agree. Then another quote I saw by you is that you called on MEPs, so members of European Parliament, to ensure mandatory crop rotation and support for leguminous protein crops?
Right. Look, the problem that we face is twofold. On the one hand, we have agricultural policies that have supported and rewarded monocultures on a very large scale, types of farming that actually accelerate erosion and soil degradation because of the same land being used for the same purposes year after year, season after season. And this means that the land is gradually impoverished, that the land is exposed to erosion from wind and rainfall. And crop rotation is a way to reduce this land degradation and to essentially rebuild the health of the soils. And that can be done in particular by planting in the soils leguminous plants that actually fertilize the soils by capturing nitrogen from the atmosphere and re-injecting the nitrogen into the soil, which the soil needs, of course, to be productive and healthy. A second problem we face is that we are hugely dependent on imports of soybean and maize in order to feed our cattle, our animals. Globally, 80% of soybean production goes to feeding animals, and 40% of maize production goes to feeding animals. And Europe imports huge volumes from Brazil, from Argentina in particular, and some from the United States, of maize, of soybean to feed animals. And that is not viable. It uses lots of land in these countries, particularly Brazil and Argentina, sometimes at the expense of the protection of the forests in Brazil, and that is something that should not be allowed to continue. I believe we should reduce the industrial feedstock for cattle in Europe, and I believe that we should produce as much as possible our own proteins from vegetables in Europe, instead of continuing to put pressure on Brazil and Argentina to do this.
Jörg still has a question for you. It will be something with figures, I think, no?
Not necessarily. There was an agreement was reached yesterday on the new European budget, and we were told that it impacted agricultural budget mainly. Does this have any impact on what we're talking about now?
Well, I think the question is not so much how much money goes in the common agricultural policy than for which purposes. And what we have seen over the past 10 years is that increasingly the spendings of the common agricultural policy have not been supporting an increase in volumes. Instead, the support to farmers has rewarded them for maintaining the landscapes, for taking care of the land, for preserving the land in an environmentally sustainable way, and that is what is called decoupling. And I think it's a very good thing, and the recent proposals on the table for the common agricultural policy do reduce the budget to a certain extent, not very significantly, but what's more important is that they go a bit further, these reforms, towards this decoupling, which I think is a very good thing, although it could go even further. So that would be my first reaction.